A lone man washes up on the shore of a Greek island, barely clinging to life. His ship has been destroyed, his crew has perished, and he has nothing but the rags on his back. Yet this man is no beggar, but a king. Odysseus has been called many names, hot-headed and much enduring, a sacker of cities, and Zeus's equal in mind. But on this unknown shore, Odysseus is a stranger. And this king is also a stranger in his own home. 20 years have passed since he left Ithaca for the Trojan War, and his infant son is now grown, and Odysseus is presumed dead by the dozens of suitors competing for his wife and his throne. When a young woman, Nausicaa, sees Odysseus on the shore, she is frightened, but she is a princess with the means to care for him. So she takes Odysseus, knowing nothing of his own royal background, in. Odysseus is given clothing and a meal, but when the court musician sings of the Trojan War, he breaks into tears. Clearly, there is more to this stranger than meets the eye, so they ask for one thing in return for their care: his story. And this epic story is the Odyssey, one of the oldest and greatest stories from ancient Greece. Odysseus tells the court of monsters and magic, ghosts and gods. But one crucial part of the story is yet to be told: the return of the king to reclaim his throne. My name is Sean. Welcome to Mythos and Logos. Odysseus's reputation is as a brilliant strategist who was instrumental in winning the Trojan War for the Greeks. While Homer's other epic, the Iliad, focuses on the warrior Achilles and his role in Troy's fall, Achilles is struck down in his heel before the war's end. And when Achilles passes, it is not the might of Ajax, but the brain power of Odysseus that wins the war. He infiltrates the city through a trap disguised as a gift, the Trojan horse. It is no surprise, then, that the master strategist is favored by Athena, the wise warrior goddess, who so often comes in disguise, only to reveal herself when the time is right. But the story Odysseus tells spends little time on the war, focusing instead on his decade-long journey home. A homecoming filled with just as much danger as the battlefields of Troy. In one episode of his story, Odysseus and his crew stumble into the lair of the giant Cyclops, Polyphemus. And Cyclopes are terrible hosts. The one-eyed giant eats one of Odysseus's men as an evening snack, knowing that he could crush them all in a fight. But it is in a scenario where force could never win that Odysseus shines, devising a plan and setting it in motion by offering the Cyclops some wine to wash down his meal. Now, this giant brute has never had wine before, and he loves it, asking for bowl after bowl. Now, the Cyclops asks Odysseus his name, so he knows who to thank for the gift. So I gave him some more of the ruby-red wine. 3 times the fool drained the bowl dry. And when the wine had begun to work on his mind, I spoke these sweet words to him. Cyclops, you ask me my name, my glorious name, and I will tell it to you. No Man is my name. They call me No Man. My mother, my father, and all my friends too. He answered me from his pitiless heart. No man I will eat last after his friends. Friends first, him last. That is my gift to you. When the drunken Cyclops passes out, Odysseus swings into action, sharpening a tree into a stake and heating it in the fire. When it is glowing red, he and his men thrust it into the Cyclops' eye. Gigantic screams wake the monster's brothers. But when Polyphemus shouts, "No man is killing me by some kind of trick," they see no cause for alarm. Nobody is harming him, after all. Odysseus and his men disguise themselves as sheep and escape from the blinded beast. But Odysseus is not satisfied with being known as a nobody. Sailing away, he brags, shouting for the Cyclops to tell everyone that it is Odysseus of Ithaca who conquered the beast with his mind. This brag sets Odysseus back years. Polyphemus's father is the earth-shaking ocean god Poseidon. And while even the gods can't change fate, Poseidon vows to make Odysseus's journey long and arduous. This is not the only time on his troubled journey that Odysseus pushes his luck. He tricks the witch goddess Circe, who had used a drug to transform his men. Then he is bewitched by her words to spend a full year with her. Odysseus is warned of the sirens, creatures who lure men to their doom with their song. He has his crew cover their ears and tie him to the ship's mast so that he can still hear them. Other times, Odysseus is of sound mind but cannot control his men. Once, in jealousy, the men release violent winds that blow them off course. Another time, in greed, they slaughter the gods' sacred cattle. At times, Odysseus struggles to control his higher ego, and at other times, he struggles to control his crew's lower desires. But in either case, the risks are immense. And by the time Princess Nausicaa discovers Odysseus washed up on the shore, he is alone, the sole survivor of his crew. One particular episode that Odysseus tells his hosts shows just how high the stakes of his return are. This is his descent into the underworld to meet the blind prophet Tiresias, who warns him of the dangers to come and instructs him to make a sacrifice to appease the gods. But the prophet is not the only shade Odysseus meets in the underworld. He meets the ghost of his crewman Elpenor, who died along the way, who begs him for a funeral and memorial. He meets the shade of his mother, who died of grief in his absence. Three times Odysseus reaches out to embrace her, and three times his arms pass through her hollow spirit. After his mother, Odysseus meets the mothers, wives, and daughters of great heroes before seeing the ghost of Agamemnon, the leader of the Greeks at Troy, who was killed by his wife, a homecoming turned disastrous. He meets Achilles, whose sadness in death is eased when Odysseus tells him that his son has become a decorated and valorous warrior in his own right. At the same time, back on Ithaca, Odysseus's son Telemachus is crossing into manhood. Finally, a line of ancient heroes come before Odysseus, culminating in the ultimate Greek hero, Heracles. At the sight of Heracles, or rather his phantom, as Heracles ascended to live with the gods on Olympus, the other spirits of the dead flee. Heracles is the ideal hero, with an arrow in his bow, always ready to strike, and his armor glorifying him with images of the foes he conquered. His belt, a baldric of gold crossing his chest, was stark horror, a phantasmagoria of bears and wild boars and green-eyed lions, of battles and bloodshed, murder and mayhem. May this be its maker's only masterpiece, and may there never again be another like it. Heracles recognized me at once, and his words beat down on me like dark wings. Son of Laertes in the line of Zeus, crafty Odysseus, poor man, do you too drag out a wretched destiny, such as I once bore under the rays of the sun? I was a son of Zeus and a grandson of Cronus, but I had immeasurable suffering, enslaved to a man who is far less than I, who laid upon me difficult labors. Once he even sent me here to fetch the Hound of Hell, for he could devise no harder task for me than this. That hound I carried out of the house of Hades, with Hermes and gray-eyed Athena as guides. Hermes, the guardian and messenger, and Athena, the wise strategist, are also allies of Odysseus, and they are exactly what he will need to make it home. Even a legendary hero like Heracles struggles, but with grace and wisdom, not even the hellhound Cerberus can stop him. With these two gods, Odysseus can save his wife Penelope from meeting his mother's fate, and can avoid the bitter homecoming that met Agamemnon, and can feel the joy that Achilles felt learning of his son by taking back Ithaca, which his own son Telemachus will lead one day. When in time Odysseus arrives on Ithaca's shore, the land is covered in a haze. He thinks he must be in yet another strange land and wonders if he will meet God-fearing or lawless men. A good question even on Ithaca, considering the decades gone by. A stranger appears to him and confirms that this is Ithaca, but Odysseus hides his joy, telling that he is stranded far from home, and begging to the stranger for help as if before a god. And lucky for him, this stranger is a god, or rather, a goddess. Athena reveals herself through the disguise as her eyes light up, proud of Odysseus for not foolishly showing his hand. They sit at the base of her sacred olive tree, the wisest of the gods and the most intelligent of men, and make their plan. Disguised as a beggar, Odysseus is able to see firsthand who is noble and who is treacherous. The suitors fall into this second group, while his son Telemachus and a few faithful servants treat him, even disguised as a beggar, with respect that is worthy of a king. So Odysseus reveals himself to his son and a loyal servant, and together they plan to take back their home. This return is not a moment too soon. Fed up with a decade of delay, the suitors push the Queen Penelope to choose one of them for her new husband. And while it's debated whether Penelope recognizes her husband Odysseus through his disguise, she creates a test that only one as worthy as him could pass. She brings forth Odysseus's bow and declares that the one who can string it and shoot an arrow through a series of small rings will be her husband. Odysseus's bow is an extension of himself and symbolizes the ability and potency from which his authority derives. Only one who has the strength and skill to wield it as he did can rightfully claim the throne. The strongest of the suitors each fail to string the bow, and they're convinced that it is some trick. Prince Telemachus lifts the bow to show that there is no trick and nearly strings it himself, but willingly stops short as he locks eyes with his father. In this moment, Telemachus both proves himself to be a worthy heir and shows respect, acknowledging that it is not yet his time. When the beggar steps up to try, the suitors laugh. When he effortlessly strings the bow and shoots through the rings, the laughter stops. Thunder, Zeus's instrument of authority, cracks in the sky, and Odysseus's disguise is lifted. Instantly, all recognize him. The loyal servants have locked the suitors' weapons away, and what comes next is an intense battle in which Odysseus and Telemachus take back their home together. In the aftermath, Odysseus has a loyal nurse start a cleansing fire, and he purifies his house. When the cleansing is done, the nurse brings Penelope and her courtiers before Odysseus, who finally, setting the war behind him, weeps. But Penelope has one last test for her husband. She calls her servants to bring out the couple's bed so that Odysseus may lay down. But Odysseus knows and tells her that this is impossible. He built his bedroom around an olive tree, which he carved into their bedpost. This shared secret reveals that the couple both are who they say they are. Because he knows the secret, Odysseus truly has returned. And because no one else does, Penelope truly has been loyal. In the Odyssey's final book, Odysseus reunites with his father, and a final battle seems ready to take place as the families of the suitors seek vengeance. But in a show of divine might, lightning strikes and Athena appears before the warriors, imploring them to stop. Zeus's authority and Athena's wisdom end the cycle of violence, just as her wisdom led Odysseus home. The Odyssey is of truly epic scale, and there are many lessons that we can apply in our own lives. Odysseus's natural cunning set him apart from the other men of his time, and led him to victory over the brute Cyclops. But when that talent led to foolhardiness and overconfidence, it was nearly his undoing. Athena's guidance showed him the importance of patience and wisdom in harnessing his natural abilities. The journey to the underworld gave Odysseus lessons from the past, both in understanding the dangers ahead of him, like Agamemnon's disastrous homecoming, and in giving the key to victory. And the example of Heracles, the hero who also suffered, but was able to conquer even the hellhound, protected by grace and guided by wisdom. These forces brought Odysseus home and established a future for Ithaca in his son Telemachus, his wife Penelope, and Athena and Zeus's demand for peace. If we too can learn from the heroes who have come before us and use our gifts with wisdom as our guide, like Odysseus, we can emerge victorious in our battles and always succeed in our journeys home. Thank you for joining. This was part two of a three-part series of ancient epics. If you missed part one, which was covering the Iliad, definitely check out the link in the description, recommended video. I think you will really enjoy it. As far as part three, we're going to go forward from Greece to Rome, taking the sequel that views the war from the Trojan point of view, the Aeneid. It is a fantastic work that inspired some great authors, including Dante in the Divine Comedy, where the author of the Aeneid, Virgil, is his guide, and I truly hope to see you there. Thank you to everyone for your support, being here, watching, liking, commenting, subscribing, and especially to our Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for making this possible and making my life better for being able to do this for you. Thank you. I'll see you then.